Greetings, cultivators worldwide. Jordan River here with more GrowCast, helping you plant seeds of greatness. Today, speaking of greatness, we have Chris Trump on the line. Chris Trump is a Korean natural farming expert. He knows so much about plant life and cannabis cultivation. It's a really, really great episode. Quick announcement, Chris Trump will also be at the Denver meetup, which we now have a location for. That's right. Our Denver, Colorado meetup is going down. It's at the Tetra Lounge, and that is in Denver, Colorado on Saturday, May 7th. Saturday, May 7th. Come on down. I'm going to be there. Ryza Rich is going to be there. Chris Trump is going to be there. Brett from Heart and Soil is going to be there. Weed Should Taste Good is going to be there. There's going to be other people popping in, some surprises. Actually, could be some incredible surprise guests. You're going to want to come down to this event. We're going to make it worth your while. We're going to have all sorts of goodies and plans for you. So come on down to Tetra Lounge, T-E-T-R-A, Tetra Lounge in Denver. And that is Saturday, May 7th. I cannot wait to kick it with my Colorado Gromies. And again, if this is your first time hearing Chris Trump, go back and listen to the other episodes. If you're within striking distance, come on down to the Denver meetup and hang out with not only the GrowCast crew, but Chris Trump and other friends of the show as well. So very, very excited about that and very excited about this episode. You're going to love it. Before we jump into it with Chris, though, shout out to Rimrock Analytical, my favorite choice for sex testing. RimrockAnalytical.com, code GrowCast for free shipping. Get that sex testing done. Stop wasting time sexing your plants. As soon as that true leaf pops out, you can snip a cotyledon and have a sex test result in as little as 3 days. They work so fast. I've seen these guys work on Sundays. They're working weekends. They're getting you your sex tests quickly and accurately. No better service out there. RimrockAnalytical.com. Support the small guys. It's a small business. He's killing it. I just sent mine off. I'm looking right now at all my different clones, the Molokai Frost that I ended up popping, some Tectonic Truffle from Ryza Rich, GrowCast Seed Co. So much going on over there. And I just took about half of them and sex tested them just to give myself an idea of what I can select from. And it's a really great way to save time and money. You're not wasting soil or fertilizer or, you know, clone supplies or anything like that. Just quickly and easily identify the males, kill them when they're seedlings. RimrockAnalytical.com for the fastest, accurate sex testing you can find. And code GrowCast gets you free shipping, everybody. And you support the show. Anytime you use a code, be sure to send us a snapshot on our Instagram or DM it to us somehow, email it to us. That is so you're entered to win free seeds. Okay, everybody, let's get into it with Chris Trump. Thank you for listening and enjoy the program. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today again. Before we get started, as always, I urge you to tell a grower about the show, turn someone on to growing, and make sure to check out our membership program, The Order of Cultivation, our little secret society of growers. Find us at growcastpodcast.com/membership. Today, we are on the line with a longtime GrowCast friend and truly one of the world's leading experts in Korean natural farming. It's been a minute. Chris Trump is back on the line. What's up, Chris? Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Jordan. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man.
It's a good place to be.
I love talking to Chris Trump. We connected at the Regenerative Conference in Michigan, and he was up there speaking along with a lot of other amazing luminaries. But what else have you been up to, man? I know you've been traveling with the Regenerative Conference. How's that been going? How is life?
Yeah, the Regenerative Conference tour was super cool this year. And it was great seeing you, hanging out with you and Steve Dredd there in
yes,
Michigan. Was pretty sweet. We went to Maine from there. Really neat community in Maine. I think just in general, like, Maine has been impressive in their excitement, I think, of, you know, of anybody in the tour. I think Michigan and Maine was the most excited participants, where this was just exactly what they needed for the journey and the grow. So it was pretty cool. Maine was at a very eclectic dispensary too. It was a dispensary that was an antique store. Mm. And they just kept all the antiques and like moved them around and made them display. So it's like this, you know, it's like 700-fold samurai sword with the maker's mark on it and glass pipes. So it was, it was a lot of fun.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was a neat spot, and a really sweet family that run it. Yeah, I've been good, man. It's life is challenging for me. This last year and a half has been no easy journey, but it's also sweet. Tons of beautiful times and moments. I apologize for a little bit of noise. I am living in Colorado right now, and my kids are in Idaho, so I'm with them a week, a month, while I work kind of extra right now. So I'm driving up to be with my kids.
Oh, we understand, man. Got to put that family first. Got to make that drive. And, you know, we'd rather have you on the line and have you on the show here in the car. You know, get your wonderful knowledge is what counts. If we can't get you in front of a condenser microphone, that's fine. We will get Chris Trump and pick his brain through the cellular signal just fine. We got a bunch of people tuning in live. Shout out to all the members listening to this. And they have lots of questions. But I do have some here that were pre-submitted and written by me and the team. So I would like to pick your brain a little bit here. Starting with that regenerative conference, what was some of the stuff that you were presenting on that you found that people really enjoyed hearing about? And also, follow-up question, what did you learn or find something that surprised you from the other panelists from the Regen Tour?
So what I think was what I found, or the kind of feedback that was really helpful for the growers, was I kind of took a little liberty to kind of really push forward that if you are wanting to use regenerative practices, specifically Korean natural farming, I just circled it back to you have to consider that IMO is a vital component of the process. You can't just use ferments. And in using IMO, this liquid IMO process is both cost effective and really doable. So I did, in-person kind of display of making liquid IMO. We also had some made and ready to go. We scoped it a bit in Michigan, which was a lot of fun. And just really encouraged people to kind of deep dive into indigenous microorganisms.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I took a bit of time for those that kind of want to hybridize or use a little of this and a little of that, just to get through into some general guidelines and thought around brewing. One of the things I feel really important, or that is really important for people to know, is that compost tea is not for nutrients. You can add nutrients when applying it, but the process of brewing a tea is specifically for brewing out microbes. Mm-hmm. So the best recipe for microbial cultivation is the best compost tea recipe. Now, if you want to use that time that you're spraying your plants with the compost tea to also deliver nutrients, you can add those in post-brew. But if you're just loading it with all the things you think plants want to eat, that isn't necessarily going to be the best environment for microbial cultivation in a water column.
Wow.
And so just kind of, getting into that kind of misnomers and things that go wrong and different techniques you can use and the good and bad of them. I spent some time there just kind of general talk about brewing in liquid. And I think that was probably something that people got a lot out of, because a lot of people have their process. They might not go full natural farming, but knowing how to make it better a little bit, or understanding the principles, that's usually where I like to lead farmers, is just knowing the principles so they can make their own decisions.
Well, that really makes an interesting point, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but do you kind of feel that, you know, because these things are so integrated, all these spokes in the wheel are necessary, maybe sometimes people try their hand at KNF and just use a ferment standalone or something like that, or don't have the whole complete picture. And then they have struggles and they have a failure, and they kind of write off the whole style. Is this a style that you kind of need to go whole hog, or is that only somewhat true?
So it's only somewhat true. There are pieces of it that are super simple, accessible, and you can use them. The problem is people, especially information on the internet, you know, kind of to use a blanket generalization, sorry. But a lot of people are like, oh, I just apply my, you know, labs, or I just apply my FPJs. The problem is that in natural farming, those ingredients are never supposed to be used by themselves. Like, if you want to damage your plants and invite a ton of bed bug pressure, you use FPJ by itself, which no natural farmer trained would ever do. But that is very popular on the internet, like we're going to, or FFJ. And so, yeah, there's definitely a risk in yanking a piece of the puzzle and trying to fit it into your grow system from natural farming. But if you are going to take one component, there are some cool standalone components in natural farming. Another thing I taught in Michigan, really for that purpose, was Jadam Microbial Solution, which is the acronym is JMS.
Sure.
And if you're going to do like one thing, do that and drench it into your soil. Don't like foliar it, just kind of water it in, put it in your water system, not through tiny emitters or drip tape, as there will be yeast involved. Yeast will grow in that wet, dark space and clog all your orifices. But as like a water on the surface of your soil,
nice.
JMS is an excellent standalone component.
Cool. And that's a potato based input, right? Is it not?
Yep. It's the ingredients are a couple grams of salt and a couple potatoes and a handful of leaf mold and a handful of soil. With a couple socks for hanging seed bags.
Nice, man. Potatoes and salt. Yeah, it's like French fries for your plants. Of course they love it. That's fucking fantastic, man. Really, really cool stuff here. We have so many good listener questions and member questions here piling up. I think I need to jump to one now. You mentioned labs. Shout out to Undertow with his question. Can you ask Chris Trump to talk a little bit about labs? Making it with kefir grain versus rice wash, and super labs, if he has any experience with them.
Absolutely. So actually, our mutual good friend, Steve Reisner, Steve Dreb, is, I mean, as far as I know, the creator of super labs. I think he gets the credit. He messed with adding, oh my gosh, what is the name of the seaweed?
You're asking the wrong guy. I think he's mentioned it to me before too.
They're gonna type it in the chat right now. It's
Izzy's typing. No, Izzy, the type of seaweed?
We take it as a supplement. It's a really great supplement. They grow it in Kona Coast in Hawaii. It is.
I mean, I'll give you a
spirulina.
Boom, Stoic got it. Spirulina. That was weird. You and Stoic were on the same wavelength because it came in just as you said it.
Caught it out of the air at the same time. So spirulina, as a food, it causes the you know, we're pulling microbes out of the air. We also can get some from our food source sometimes, like the rice, etc. And spirulina helps to cultivate our purple. Oof, I am so capable of messing up this name. But it's a specific type of microbe that does wonderful things in processing nutrients and in regulating hormones in plants. It's a vital part of the soil food web. I am going to be unable
purple
to
purple non-sulfur bacteria, Stoic you. Gardener suggests. Yes. PNSB. Yes. That's why we have chat, baby. Shout out to Stoic Gardener.
This is so good. I appreciate you guys in chat.
The order is flexing, man. They're all about it. By the way, it looks like we have, I can't even count, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 20 to 25 people watching live. Shout out to the members of the order. You guys rule.
Hey, thanks for being here, guys. And thanks for helping with this talk I'm giving. I'm thinking we need to collaborate.
Yeah, totally. Official collaboration. Fuck yeah. Okay, so the spirulina and then the PNSB.
Absolutely a wonderful addition to any grow. to learn the super labs. I think Steve Raisner talks about it on some of his podcasts, exactly how to make it. But really, it's just making LAB and adding in spirulina as a food source in the process. That's it. You're just bringing in a food source for those purple non-sulfur bacteria, and that's it. And those are a vital part of a healthy system, super easy to cultivate. And we can thank Steve for messing around with the experiment. I mean, this is years ago. We were having these conversations like, hey, I figured something out. And we've been geeking on it since.
That's so cool, man.
He also is somebody that really likes to use kefir grains because it's easier. Here's a place where I'll just caveat a little bit. Easier doesn't mean better. If I were to have my druthers, if I were to give you the best, if you're going to use kefir grains, use them in the last, add them to the rice wash water at the last hour. When you think the rice wash water is ready, give it an hour with a little bit of kefir grains in there right before you add the milk, and you'll get the best of both. Problem is, if you just only use kefir grains, that can be more narrow than an indigenous in-air cultivation. So with rice wash water, kind of the Korean Natural Farming LAB process, I have a video on it, super simple. You're inviting microbes from your local environment, the dust on your shelf, the stuff floating around that you're breathing every day. You're kind of growing those out in mass, giving them a food source. So instead of this thin, tiny percent of what's blowing through the air, you have this massive culture grown out on rice wash and milk. And they're so helpful in a cannabis system. They're going to keep your, if you're running the FIP system, they're going to help keep it clean and decluttered. They are considered the police, the trash decomposers, kind of, you know, so many functions that these facultative anaerobes fulfill. Facultative anaerobes means that they can thrive in aerobic and anaerobic conditions. So LAB is great. I would encourage the attempt, for those of you that haven't tried it, to make a fermented seawater, which is LAB 1 to 700, seawater 1 to 30, and FPJ 1 to 300. You put that all
together. What was that last one? FPJ 1 to what?
1 to 300.
1 to 300.
Yeah.
And that's fermented seawater?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
You put that all together for 24 hours to ferment. You don't need aeration, just to sit and mingle. And then and you can increase the salt to 1 to 20, the seawater to 1 to 20. And real side note, just in case somebody doesn't have access to ocean water, to create ocean water, we add 30 grams of sea salt, no additives, no anti-caking agent, to 1 liter of water. And we have a jug of, or a liter of seawater.
Wow.
30 grams per liter is the equivalent of seawater.
You got all these ratios memorized, man. That would make me, I mean, I guess I get it. You know, like I memorized some poker hands, but this, I would never just be able to remember the stuff that you just said.
Oh, you wouldn't believe the things I forget though.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Purple non-sulfur bacteria just falls out of my brain sometimes.
Can I also use C90? Walking Kush asks. C90.
Absolutely. So same thing, just 30 grams per liter equals sea salt. C90 is just sea salt harvested in a specific location in South America. So that fermented seawater, your plants will hum. That can be applied foliarly. You don't need to apply it all the time. Also, if there's any ranchers in the house, this is the primo grazing land treatment. It's so cheap, but still highly effective to kind of jumpstart that soil food web and provide some mineral for your crop. But so those of you using LAB, kind of by itself. This could be a really small shift, pretty easy to make or get all these components. FPGA is pretty straightforward to make. And you can have, you even do a side-by-side. Continue your protocol on one and add a little fermented seawater on the other. And you can see what you think about the differences. But LAB is good stuff. And I feel like in cannabis, it has too high a position. I think IMO, that fungal component really needs to be considered the thing that is crave most in cannabis.
Nice. Fucking love it, man. Absolutely love it. We've got a ton of listener questions we're going to get through here. We've got some basic ones that I think I might save towards the end. For more KNF basics, check out Chris's other episodes on this podcast from days past. Here's one that I wanted to make sure you did touch on, though, man, because if I remember correctly, you got a lot to say on this subject. You talk about microbes, you talk about feeding microbes. You have a lot of thoughts on molasses, right? And reasons why you might not want to use it. And I've cautioned people. I know some people who use it with great success, but you've also heard me caution on this program for physical reasons, things like pumps and reses and things like that. But you gave an explanation of what's going on beneath the soil that really made my head spin, pardon the pun. Can you talk about molasses and how it works in the soil?
I think I gave an explanation on how it works in a compost tea system.
Yes, that's what it was.
Yep. And so I have no issue with molasses as a food source for fungi, as a source of nutrients in a soil mix. But in a brewing system, liquid molasses, I think, is your enemy to a good aerobic diverse microbial tea. The reason being is its viscosity. It acts like plastic as it creates bubbles, and those bubbles can maintain their shape, even microbubbles can maintain their shape in that water column for a long time. And what happens is the oxygen within, this is a theory. I did a lot of side-by-side or repeated trials trying to come up with the best liquid IMO recipe. And repeatedly and always, when brewing with molasses with a bunch of different ways, the brew turned out highly with extreme anaerobic indicators, meaning we had a bunch of ciliates produced. We had a lot of bacteria, a lot less fungal production. And it's because those bubbles hold their shape. So much activity is going on with all the bacterial growth and life that's going on, that the oxygen within the bubble gets used up. Now it becomes anaerobic. You have a species change or kind of a growth and die-off kind of scenario. And we start producing a bunch of anaerobes, things that like anaerobic conditions. Those continue to multiply in your water column, and using that kind of anaerobic scenario or kind of decreased, oxygen transfer that that those kind of plasticky molasses bubbles create. And that is a physical property that molasses has that actually detracts from your diversity and the potential quality of your tea. So that said, the good of molasses is that it is a great food source. So if you wanted to use molasses in tea, and I actually do in a way use molasses because I use brown sugar, and I often use a processed brown sugar, which means that they process its white sugar and add molasses back in. However, it's a dry form. So if you want to use molasses, get dehydrated molasses. It's even cheaper or as cheap as molasses, and it won't mess up your microbial diversity in your water column. But yeah, liquid molasses is the enemy of a good, diverse compost tea, and I will argue anybody that says otherwise.
Well, clearly, I'm right there with you with that explanation that it may not be optimal. What would you recommend? What's a better option than molasses?
So people add molasses because they're like, they've heard it's a fungal food. And just to say, I'm not alone in this like goo on molasses thing? Elaine Ingham will say, absolutely not. Do not use molasses in compost tea brewing. She wasn't always that way. She used to say, use molasses. So, you know, I think the key is just learning and being able to shift. Maybe you've had this molasses recipe forever and, you know, you're a good grower and it's worked for you. Maybe if you change a little bit, you'll still experience that success and you'll see something even better. Brown sugar is a great alternative. It gives a jump start to bacterial growth, but you still have some of that fungal food. For me, that liquid IMO recipe, I have it on YouTube. I taught it in the region conferences, but it's FPJ 1 to 500, OHN 1 to 1,000, humic acid 1 to 500. Brown sugar, you use about twice the weight of brown sugar as you use your inoculum. So we use like a handful of IMO4. If you're using worm castings, twice the weight of whatever you're putting in there for your inoculum. Also, we use seawater at a rate of 1 to 20. And
that's an interesting one, seawater.
I feel like I'm missing something. Yeah, so that minor mineral, that diverse minor mineral becomes a really important building block for microbial growth. They'll kind of tee off of some of the food. So FPJ is like a boutique liquid compost, you know, really good microbe food. It's got a lot of the components of that plant still available for working with. And I feel like I'm forgetting something off the recipe, so you have to double check me on the YouTube video.
No problem, man. I'm sure lots of the listeners already subscribed. Of course, Chris Trump on YouTube. All things Korean natural farming. He works in all sorts of different fields. Really good shit on the molasses, though. That was awesome.
Yeah, molasses composting molasses. Like if you're making a static pile or a big pile, like nothing wrong with using molasses. It will process and break down. You're working with livestock, making livestock food. Molasses is great. I am specifically talking about in a water column with aeration. Molasses can become pretty detrimental to your aim at diversity. And we're always going for diversity, right, Jordan?
Very, very cool. Absolutely, man. Yeah, 100%. And that, you know, it's interesting what you said. Speaking of diversity, it is interesting what you said about the micronutrient delivery in the seawater, right? Because I speak to a lot of microbe manufacturers, and it seems like that's really the only thing that they do different. When I really dig in, like the secret sauce to these guys is just different micronutrient food source deliveries and things like that. Now, of course, people like you making your own microbes at home, why ever pay for them when you can simply ferment them yourself? But yeah, very, very interesting. And you're right. At the end of the day, more diversity, more better. So I'm all about that lifestyle.
More diversity, more better. It sounds like you're from Hawaii. Right. More better.
That's, I was just going to say, man, it's the Molokai phrase.
All right.
Let's let's make sure we get to these. There's lots of great questions. We'll be right back with Chris Trump. But before that, got to give some love to the Foop, baby. The Foop fish. Waste-based nutrients, and they've got all the goodies your plant needs. Now, you know the Foop Nutrient line, which is a four-part plus a sweetener to get you through your whole run. Certified organic nutrients, okay? Good stuff there. No EDTA, nothing in there. None of that stuff. Now, you also have the Foop Mist, which is a full-spectrum foliar, which is one of my favorite foliars out there, and it's great to use on teenage and, I would say, you know, things like clones, teenage plants. And it's going to fix a lot of those deficiencies that you may pick up. Let's say you got them in a solo cup of ProMix for a little too long and they start to get a little hungry. Pick them up with some Foop Mist. It's full spectrum, so they're going to take what they need. It's a really, really great product. And of course, don't sleep on the clone gel, which is my favorite clone gel, loaded with all sorts of goodies and microbes to enhance your biology instead of deter it like some of these other antibacterial cloning gels. Big, big fan of the clone gel, the Foop Mist, and also check out their sweetener, which they now sell alone, the Foop Sweetener. You will love it. Go and check it out. FoopCanna.com is the website. Code GROWCAST15 to save 15% across the board, baby. Shout out to Foop. It's fully certified organic. Go organic. You don't want that EDTA. We know that stuff ain't good for you. FoopCanna.com, code GROWCAST15. Check them out, everybody. All right, let's get back to it with Chris Trump. Someone asking about IMO collection during winter. This is a great, again, go back and listen to Chris's old episodes to kind of get caught up to speed. But this idea of harvesting your local indigenous microorganisms and the fact that they're sleepier in winter, they're not as present. Can you still do it? Is it worth it? What do you think, Chris?
Absolutely. You know, and sadly, I recorded a video on how to do this and haven't gotten it to the interwebs yet. But I'll give you the quick rundown because I think it's probably all you need. But the answer is absolutely you can. However, it has to change because they won't multiply if you're getting temperatures below 40 degrees at any point in the night or day. Because what happens is it stops dead, like real comes to a full halt at that temperature, or becomes so slow that it's like a halt. And then the restart takes all day. And then if it's dropping to that 40 again, you just kind of never progress. So if you're staying above 40, if you're, you know, your low is 50, then you can do an outside collection the typical way, the IMO one, and it'll take like 10 days. If you're getting that cold. But yeah, if you get below 40 or 240, you're going to stop and it's going to be impossible. So then we shift, we go out and we collect all that mycelium, we collect all that leaf litter, maybe some soil, and we bring it inside. You can put it on your, if you have a living soil bed, you just stack it there with your box, put the stuff on the box, and at 70 or 80 degrees, you do an IMO one collection indoors. If you don't have a living soil bed, you can do this by having a cardboard box or some sort of kind of larger container to put your smaller rice box container in. But then inside there, you create a forest floor with all the stuff you collected from that winter forest, sprinkle it on top. You'll get that bloom on the rice. And the reason we use that rice as kind of an auger where it's to grow is because without that plant material in there, without that wood, when we mix that rice, those microbe-covered rice kernels with sugar, we can cause the whole thing to go dormant. Whereas if you have a bunch of leaf litter and sticks and you try and incorporate that in the IMO2, it will never stay dormant. It'll volatilize and you'll lose those fungal seeds, et cetera.
Wow.
That'll all just kind of degrade. So these are specific techniques for a reason. And so same thing, principle, it blooms in 5 to 7 days, you mix it with sugar and you have a shelf stable and knock it on now. But that's how you do a winter collection. And there's some flexibility. If you do it slightly differently than I just described to you, because you have an idea, there is definitely flexibility in how you do that winter collection. And if you think you've come up with something uniquely better, like Steve Reisner did with purple non-sulfur bacteria by adding spirulina, I would love to know about it. And the way I work in this learning community is we just give each other credit. You know, if you figure something out, like we don't claim it as ours if it's something you came up with. And I believe strongly in that because we're not patenting any of this stuff. We're just sharing and talking about it and hopefully changing the world for the next generation.
Man, I love it. Couldn't have said it better myself. I thank you for giving us so much time
and came up with
so much of your knowledge.
Yeah, look what I came up with. And you're like, that guy, he didn't come up with that. So yeah, that's kind of the honor in this open source research platform we got going here.
Well, we appreciate it, man. Q-Ball, shout out to member Q-Ball, says, can we sit here for 10 hours and pick his brain? I think we have about a half hour left, Q-Ball, but we're going to definitely get him on as much as we can. Let's see. Let's knock another one out here, man. Let's keep going. Again, saving some of the beginner ones for last because I'm kooky like that. I know I had another one. Someone asking, can I get a drinking tea recipe for leftover material from OHN?
Hey. Drinking tea recipe. So I'm going to help me out here, Jordan. I'm going to assume that this question is asking, can you give me a human consumption item I can make out of my OHN leftover?
Yes, that's what it sounds like. The OHN being the herb-based farming input.
Okay, well, I'm going to switch this up on you, question asker. Who is asking this?
Walking Kush, and he does confirm that's what he meant. He likes tea. I'm using this stuff anyways. What can I do?
I'm with him. All right. Walking Kush, are you more valuable than your plants? The answer is yes.
Yeah, of course.
Because natural farming philosophy, the farmer must first farm themselves. Because if there's no farmer, there's no farm, right? If you're struggling, your farm's struggling. Or
put on your oxygen mask before helping those around you.
Absolutely, because otherwise there is no those around you. You're all dead, right?
Yep.
All right. So it's not selfish. It's necessary. Take a few droppers of that OHN, add it to your favorite tea, or just brew some water, add some of your OHN to your tea and a little bit of honey. You can add mint in OHN. There's all kinds of things. OHN in your soup. It's a wonderful addition to human health. I put it in a spray bottle and just spray the back of my throat a couple times when I travel if I don't want to get sick. OHN is a wonderful health component, and you should use the premium liquid that you've just spent 2.5 months making as the human tea component for the answer to your question. Now,
just eat the OHN.
drink the OHN. Come on now. The leftovers, however, you can do some cool stuff with. But I will say that my favorite thing to do with the leftovers is to mingle them with some IMO, some good compost, some food waste, and use them, all of that, as the beginning of your worm bin or as an addition to your worm bin. Because OHN materials in your worm bin, now when you take out that finished worm castings or that humic acid leachate that the worms drip through, you're getting this prebiotic component in your worm farm from these OHN materials that are breaking down in there that I think is very, very valuable. So that is my highest and best use of OHN materials, is to feed your worm community with them.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
A lot of people shouting out the health benefits of Korean natural farming inputs. Rugged Gent, my man Rugged Gent, eats the labs and the OHN. Now, if you look at the back of these very overpriced probiotic pills that you buy from GNC, what do you see, Chris Trump? What is the first thing you see, that first word every time?
Lactobacilli.
What the fuck, man?
And really they're trying for like maybe 20 cultures is like your super high-end probiotic. They're really stoked to name 20 lactobacilli family microbes. But we're seeing that you have many different cultures in just a basic LAB that you make in the Korean natural farming version. Here's the difference, though. On all your probiotics, they say, we have 1 billion blah, 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 or 10 billion, or whatever they're telling you how many microbes they have. There's this little fine print. I don't think they even have to write it on there, but it's part of the kind of understanding of the industry. They aren't guaranteeing that any of them will wake up in your gut or be viable when you consume them. They have no idea if they, when you eat them, will be living microbes, because they're all freeze-dried, right? They're all kind of put to sleep, so to speak. And so that difference, because LAB, when you make it yourself, is totally alive. Everything at full tilt, kind of vibrancy as you drink it. Whereas, buying a probiotic, you're hoping that some of that vitality that was going on when they stuffed it into a freeze-dried pill, it has maintained and will wake up in your gut. If I make LAB and it turns out really good, I don't let it go too long, so that cheese is really fresh and sweet. There's no like rotten sock smell or anything. So if there's a rotten sock smell, you let it go too long. No negative stinky cheese smell. I harvest it a little early while the cheese is still soft, and that's the best for human consumption because it tastes like pretty much nothing. It's just like a really light, pretty enjoyable drink. That's what where we want to be for human consumption. But I'll take that cheese, strain off the LAB, and I'll put it in the fridge with a lid, with like a cloth over it, and it keeps really nicely because it's alive still in the fridge. And I'll take some scoops and I'll put it in my smoothie. So you get that kind of living, you know, that fat from, you know, the casein protein from the milk, and then you have that living component. So I get a really nice kind of creamy texture to the smoothie with that cheese.
Man, that is some shit right there. I'm all about it. I love me some cheese. Might as well make it fresh. Okay, let's see here. We have a little bit of time left. We have beginner questions. We have Jesse VA. Jesse VA, a valued member, asks, what is Chris Trump's favorite companion plants to repel pests? Also, if he has a favorite, are there easy herbicides to make at home from them? That is an interesting question.
Great question. I'll answer the second part first. Buy the Jadon book. It's $50 on Amazon. Get the second edition. You can also, they have a 100 herb book, which is also cool. But just the basic orange Jadon book, second edition, has a, it's not even really a book for reading. It's really just a how-to instruction manual to make your own pesticide. And we don't even call it a pesticide because it is, ends up being just a plant food. We're just using herbs, boiled, and homemade surfactant, which is just a any organic sticker or surfactant, like Soft Oil X, I think, is organically certifiable, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of those, all they are oils of potassium salts. And that's all that Jadon is teaching you in making that JWA, that Jadon wetting agent, is they're teaching you to make oils of potassium salts. And that by itself, that JWA that you can learn from that book, is a totally viable pesticide and totally safe. You can shower with it. You can wash your hands with it. You can wash your baby with it. Like, totally safe.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, and you can actually, there's a slight variation, I think, in the second edition that they provide that shows you how to make it into bar soap. So you can stop buying soap at the supermarket. So yeah, you could, in a year, you know, if you just make your own soap, even your like push pump soap, you probably pay for your Jadon book just with that one detail. But they also have a pesticide tools in there where you're boiling like Jerusalem artichoke or ginkgo leaves. These just have kind of pesticidal properties in the plants themselves. However, these also, I mean, Jerusalem artichoke's a food. You can eat it. And you can drink your finished pesticide without getting hurt. And you can spray it on and kill all your aphids too. So it's, we don't call it a pesticide. Again, we call it a plant nutrient. And it just so happens that all our bugs die too. And that's because as soon as you call something a pesticide, the EPA needs to regulate it.
Right.
And if you want EPA regulating your plant nutrient, call it a pesticide. And then the other question about a repellent plant, I don't mess with those. I do not believe in banker plants being a good tool, especially on a cannabis farm. I think you're just inviting problems.
Wow.
So better is to cultivate beneficials. Maintaining a cover crop and cultivating some beneficials, finding out what beneficials are best for your problems. And there are some great resources on that. My favorite person in that business is Suzanne Wainwright. She's Bug Lady on Instagram.
Absolutely. And, been a guest to this show before. Her talk at that Michigan thing was awesome.
Yeah, she's good people and she's smart. And she also isn't a big fan of banker plants.
Listen, Chris, I know that you're up against it here and you're on the road. So let's wrap this thing. We got to get you back on. So dope, says Jesse. People loving it. We're going to do one question from Walking Kush really quick. Liquid IMO, does it work as a fungicide?
Okay, so short answer is no. It doesn't kill fungus. It doesn't get rid of your fungus. No, this is old world isolation, kill everything, pasteurize. We all have disease. We must sterilize everything. This is, yeah, if you're growing hydroponics, get your fungicides and burn, torch, obliterate, you know, get out your rocket launcher and kill all things. However, that's not how nature works, right? Nature is a balanced system that protects from disease through diversity and balance. So liquid IMO will absolutely, made properly, will absolutely make it so you never have another fungal problem. Yes.
Okay. Right.
But it doesn't do it as a fungicide.
Doesn't.
Yeah. Is it natural off. Farmers that have learned, taken the time to figure out how to make good IMO, they don't deal with disease. They still can have bug problems, but nobody's dealing with disease.
Right.
I mean, it's huge. That's why I'm like, hey, learn this, fungal inoculum thing, because it really works.
That's the same thing that I heard Steve say about the liquid IMO. Okay, just to wrap it up here, let's say, Chris, that people are a fan of your work. They kind of have a basic understanding of KNF, but they want to transition into style. Maybe they currently grow with salts, or maybe it just in a different type of organic grow. What is the first thing that they should do or study? And piggyback question, these questions from Q-Ball and Weird Journey. Piggyback question, what's like a half a dozen tools that they'll need in their toolkit for KNF?
That's a great couple questions. I actually love those.
It's the 1-2.
Yeah. So the first thing to do, I would say, is IMO 1. I was just in IKEA. I had to get a dresser. Crazy store. Feel like you're in a human rat maze. But really crazy.
Meatballs at the top. They always do that.
Yeah. Really, really great stuff for good prices. Whatever. It's necessary in this weird world we live in. But they have these little baskets, these cute little nesting baskets. They were just, they didn't have coating on them. They were just kind of natural fiber. And I was like, that would make great one cultivation boxes. But really, yeah. The first thing and the most important thing I would encourage is to find a natural material box. You can make it like I have in my video, that IMO1, and get some way to put a little screen on the top of it and a paper towel, and get like 6 collections out in the spring, and get at least 2 of them to bloom or do it over, and put those into cryo-freeze with some brown sugar, make that IMO2, and get that IMO2 on the shelf. With IMO2 on the shelf, you have an effective inoculum to make liquid IMO. Liquid IMO, I have on my website, if you go to my store, I'm not even selling it. I just provide links to my favorite things on Amazon.
Nice.
So you can go and get a basic air pump for putting in a 5-gallon bucket and brewing some tea. You can get some of my favorite funnels and things like that. So a few of those things on there to answer that second question are my favorite tools I've just thrown up, because people are always asking, oh, what do you want to use for this or that? And so I just kind of curated a basic list of my favorite tools right there. That's at christrump.com. Just click on the shop. I currently don't sell anything on my shop. I probably will in the next month make OHN and fish amino acid available again. It'll be year old fish amino acid that we made in Washington with salmon. So that'll be good plant fertilizer if you need some, because it takes so long to make. That's kind of how I view making some of the products, is I just make available really the things that take like 3 months to make, because people learn about it, they're excited to do it, and then they're like, wait a second, I don't have these two components, because one takes a year and one takes 3 months. And so I've felt for the plight of those people, and I don't have any on there now. But yeah, IMO1. Make some IMO2, get it on the shelf, And now you have something way better than LAB, way better than JMS. You have something way better than anything you're going to buy. If you make it properly, way better than anything you're going to buy at the store. As far as a inoculant, people are like, oh, I got Mycos. And it's like, cool. Use that. If you really like that, great. Add it in. But no, I've been at a farm where they used a, you know, off the shelf lab product and they use Mycos. Actually, Verde in Colorado. They're like, we're a living soil, you know, system. But their grow system is Mycos and a LAB product, bugs in a jug. And that's the life of their living soil system. And I just suggest to you that that's not going to prevent you from powdery mildew or fungal diseases. And it's not necessarily a soil, a nutrient cycling soil system. That's not necessarily an engine that's turning and processing nutrients for your plant. It does have some plant interactions. It is definitely better than nothing. But I'm telling you, this IMO2, you have an inoculum that is, I mean, the best inoculums on the shelf are, you know, a couple hundred dollars a gallon. IMO2 is far more valuable than those. So for a bit of rice and a little bit of work, you're making a $300-$400 a gallon item for your grow, and it's worth it.
Izzy Natural, IMO or compost tea, which is a better inoculant? And then I promise I'm going to let you go, Chris.
I'm good, Jordan. You do what you need to do for your timing. So IMO or what?
Compost tea.
So not all compost tea is equal. Your compost tea is only as good as your ingredient. So I don't know. What's your compost tea like? Have you scoped it? I have a video on my Instagram, maybe, you know, 30 tiles down, I don't know, where it's my face and a microscope in the picture if you're looking for the which one to watch. And that's what liquid IMO looks like if properly made. It's incredible.
It's kind of more like a surefire thing is what you're saying, as opposed to compost tea, which may widely vary.
Well, no, I mean, people, if they made crap, like if they tried to make IMO and actually didn't make anything except bad compost, and then they add bad ingredients, they can call it liquid IMO, but nothing good's happening.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So diversity is the answer. Make something that's actually microbially diverse. Compost tea or IMO, do it right, and you have the best thing for your process. Do it poorly, you know, and, you know, call it IMO, call it compost tea. I don't care what you call it. If it's poorly made, it's not as good as something that's made well. Even so, you know, a poorly made quote unquote IMO is way less effective than a well made quote unquote pile of compost.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I know that we did have you booked just until right now at the top of the hour. Do you have a few more minutes? What's your schedule like here?
Let's keep talking.
Oh, okay, cool.
I have another 20 minutes if you feel so inclined.
That would be perfect, man. Wonderful. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't keeping you, because I know that you are in transit right now.
Yeah.
So CEO has a question, and this is actually a really good point. As somebody who's never run this system but heard quite a bit about it, you know, all these acronyms, they're making my head spin. No, all these acronyms, what are all the things that you need to do a, quote, KNF run start to finish? Like, do you need all of those acronyms? Is there a core three, like a micro grow and a bloom?
Sure. No, I am super empathetic and understanding on how challenging the incredible volume of acronyms KNF comes with. It's surmountable. If you take some time and write them down and learn what they are, watch the videos, you can know what they all mean. Quick question for CEO. He can type in chat and I'll keep answering his question. Does he play online video games? Just curious.
CEO? I bet he does. Yeah, he does.
Does he play Orbis?
Does he play Orbis? Do you play Orbis? Like, oh, I know. I asked him. He can hear you.
Yeah.
Robust? No. I think that was autocorrect. I don't think he plays Orbis. What is Orbis?
Okay. It's the first ever online MMORPG for VR.
Oh, whoa.
So it's VR World of Warcraft, if you will.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, even before that, EverQuest, Ultima Online, anybody?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is like VR MMO.
I played Ultima Online.
That was the best one, man.
That was. Before it became all like item-based, it was all based. It was pretty cool.
I agree.
All right, so yeah, Orbitz is the first of its kind. It's going to be Ready Player One. You know, Facebook's about to try and take over the world with, you know, their own currency, and you're going to come together and go bowling with your friends and buy your Facebook favors while you all hang out and talk story in their virtual world they're about to drop on us all. You know they're trying to create real estate right now. Sorry.
No,
terrible
no shit,
rabbit
man.
Trail.
I would talk about that for a whole nother hour, because that's a Growcast TV subject right there. Sorry. Yeah, continue.
But yeah, I followed the MMOs since I was a kid. I built computers when I was in high school and the absolute super nerd. So I don't really play video games anymore, but my kids wanted VR, so I mess with them. Sometimes I'll be traveling far away and we'll set a time and we'll jump in this virtual world together and run around and kill some monsters, or my girls want to go, you know, do something else. And it's pretty cool, even though a little scary at the same time. All right, your question is a good one, CEO. And how about this? I'm gonna answer this briefly, but I'm gonna do something that I've never done. I'm gonna commit to creating a video free online. I'm gonna be accountable to you, Jordan, and your listeners.
All right, yeah, CEO's gonna come knocking.
All right, we'll say by the end of summer, before the end of summer, hopefully a lot sooner, but I'm gonna do something that I know I can hit. I'm gonna create a how-to natural farming lab, like the things you need to get set up with everything you need to run full KNF grow. That's a how-to that I've needed
yes.
to make for a while.
That's a dope video.
All right. What you want is ideally what your grow is, that you have all of this on the shelf ready to go. Meaning when you're farming, you want to just have the nutrients ready to pour into a little measuring device, to pour into some water to use. The point is not to be making natural farming inputs all the time.
Right.
I've talked about this elsewhere, but I want to say it here for you guys. Like my farm, I farm 750 acres of organic macadamia nuts on the Big Island of Hawaii. That's what I was doing before I made my first video 6 years ago. I did all the farming with natural farming and all the learning curve and all the nuance and the few things I changed before I ever started to teach it, because that's how I work. I want to make sure this isn't some theoretical BS. This is something that I use at a 750 acre scale for years before I was teaching it.
Right. And a product that's a much thinner profit margin than what we grow. Nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I make $1.25 a pound on my macadamia nuts.
Yeah, baby. The macadamia rush.
there's a lot of cost in those numbers too. But the point is, I would make 100% of the inputs I needed for a growing year in 2 weeks a year. So I do 1 week, I'd make 6 months worth of what we need. And then 6 months later, I do 1 week, I'd make another 6 months of what we need. So then all I'm doing is mixing up liquid IMO, or sometime, yeah, actually it's always just mixing up liquid IMO. And everything's right there. So it would take me 5 minutes to make liquid IMO, you know, 5-10 minutes to pump it into my spray rig. And I dump in a little FAA in my spray rig after I filled it with IMO, liquid IMO, and then I'd spray it out. My the biggest time was cleaning the brewer. That was the biggest time, other than the 2 weeks a year to make all my inputs, was to clean my brewer. And you got to clean it well. It needs to be well cleaned. The reason I'm saying this is because a lot of people think, oh, natural farming is so daunting. You know, you got to make all these inputs all the time. No, If you're making inputs all the time, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing, because that's what it seems like, you know, and maybe that's a trap of small scale production. Like if you're not, like you said, scaling up enough.
No, not the trap of small scale production. The trap of it seeming overwhelming. So I make a little bit of this or a little bit of that. And I would just take the time for those of you heady people. Some people aren't like this, and that's okay. You're going to have your own process to get there. Ultimately, we're all trying to get to a nice shelf with all our finished products on it, with a box with our IMO in it for inoculum, and we just use it. But for those guys that are going to sit down, or ladies, probably the ladies will be the smarter ones to sit down and figure this all out. Sit down. Sorry, guys. I'm just giving you crap. To sit down and figure out how much am I going to spray each week, or what am I going to do each week? If I'm just going to make a spray of liquid IMO, my recommendation to you guys is do your protocol and just do a liquid IMO spray once a week.
Hmm.
If you're cautious to change, you know how to grow, you don't want to change anything, make your transition year just liquid IMO once a week. Don't change anything else. Just try that and watch what happens. It's pretty incredible.
Man.
I wish. Maybe I'll text you some pictures, Jordan, of what the grow looks like this week.
There, please.
On Parachute, where it's just liquid IMO once a week. But I'm down at Eden Farms, and I think at the meetup, we'll bring up some samples for you to try.
I'm sorry, before we move on too far, everyone's asking about, you know, the foliar heavy style. Is there anything that you put in the soil on your farm? What's the protocol between spraying and feeding the soil with these types of inputs?
Absolutely. So, you know, if a liquid IMO once a week seems heavy or like too much work, no worries. Really, then just make an IMO4, apply it at the beginning of the cycle to change nothing else. Continue to grow your normal way. That nutrient cycling potential. Ideally, you're going to have some soil there, not just cocoa. But it's creating, you know, people are like, oh, I can't just go dig dirt and grow in dirt. It's too dense. It doesn't have the aeration. Absolutely, you're right. But if you take dirt and fill your pot for next cycle, this cycle continue to grow, but fill your pot for next cycle, stick it in the grow room. I know it's going to be expensive space, and grow something in it, or grow some cannabis, but know that it's not going to do well that first year.
Mm.
If you're going to do no aeration, nothing, just straight digging funky dead dirt from wherever you can find it, find the most living place you can, but just dig some dirt and stick it in a pot, inoculate it with proper IMO or liquid IMO, and then grow plants in it. Where you get the aeration is where the worms come to life and the fungi start to create structure, where it's not mashing together into a hard cake pile and your stuff can't live. But as soon as this starts living and you're getting photosynthesis that's bringing exudates, and now you got worms moving through it, the soil's fluffy. I can dig with my hands down 2 feet. It just takes a little start if you have to start with dead soil to bring it to life. But if it's alive, now all you're getting all this nitrogen from dirt. You're getting all these minor minerals from dirt. And that stuff that we think is so worthless, you know, and I'm not speaking for me. I'm just speaking the general idea is that dirt doesn't have value like compost. That's not true. So rich, but it's a locked box with 10 padlocks unless you have fungi. And this is the whole thing here, is like all these things that were impossible ways to grow become possible if you have fungal life and diverse fungal life, because they start cycling that and the worms are happy. Now just top dress with like bokashi or compost you make at home, or worm casting, whatever you can get. Just continue to feed those worms and microbes on the surface, and that soil engine will cycle at full tilt. I need to circle back to, what do you need for a lab? Should we circle back there, Jordan? What do you need to get started with?
Or
are we too far down the road?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring it back around.
All right. Say, okay, we're growing cannabis. Get yourself 3 feet deep box by, you know, 4 foot wide, 3 foot wide, 2 foot wide, whatever. We've determined that there's a critical mass needed. You can't do this in 10 gallon pots. You have to have a certain volume for this to maintain a real ecosystem that you can work with. So, and then I worked on a project with Leighton Morrison. We did this horizontal system. If you're growing on concrete, horizontal system is great. If you can grow into soil, like we're doing this new greenhouse, I got to suggest how we build it, and we took out all the concrete where the beds are going to be, so it'll go right into soil. You don't need quite the same level of horizontal structure if you're growing into soil, because you already have the drainage. You already have the pass through to the center of the earth kind of floor. And so that will just get conditioned by microbes and become better over time. But if you're growing, start with rock. So just, you know, 1 inch river rock or whatever fill, you know, you could use 1 inch pumice. You could use volcanic rock, whatever. 1 inch rock from your area, as diverse as possible. Sand, silt, and clay. So you do maybe 8 inches of rock, 8 inches of sand, silt, and clay. And then you do like 16 inches or 15 inches or whatever of compost and IMO, or create a layer of compost and sand, silt, and clay, just a transition layer, thinner transition, maybe 3-4 inches. And then just compost and a ton of IMO4. If you're going to do this system, you have to go full tilt into the microbes. That's one thing you could do. And if you just want to farm, you have a system already, you have pots already, you have some kind of living soil hybrid, then ideally you have IMO4 in a box and you can sprinkle it or brew tea with it. You know, for me, if I was doing it, I would have IMO in a box. I would have, you know, say I'm doing a home grow of four plants, and I have IMO in a little wood box so it keeps. I would have a 5 gallon bucket for brewing tea. I'd have this little air pump. You can see on my website, it's a little dinky thing that will push enough oxygen through air stones. And I would have a 5 gallon paint strainer mesh bag to put my microbes in and stick my air stone in.
Very nice.
Too fast?
I said nice.
Okay, yeah. And then I would have my FPJ on the shelf. I would have a gallon of brown rice vinegar on the shelf. I'd have my jug of OHN on the shelf. I'd have my bag of C90 there. I'd have a bag of brown sugar there. And I would have a jug of liquid humic acid. Why liquid and not solid? Solid humic acid does not go into solution in a 36-hour brew, meaning that I can add my humic acid, a handful, to my liquid IMO, but I won't get the benefit of it in that liquid IMO. It doesn't go into solution properly. A tiny bit will, but not enough. And so if you want to buy powdered humic acid, you want to do one part humic acid to 10 parts vinegar for 7 days. That will pull it into solution.
Whoa.
And you can strain off the solids and you have a liquid humic acid that will be viable. You can also use less vinegar in your liquid IMO because you have now a vinegar-based humic acid. Or you can just buy liquid humic acid where they've already properly suspended it for you. So it needs to be, if you're going to use humic acid, the best is like a Verma, a worm humic acid, but it needs to be a liquid form if you're going to brew tea with it. You can't use solid. It'll just basically settle in the bottom or clog your lines or whatever. It's just, it doesn't go into solution very well without some help.
This is mind blowing.
But yeah, I'd have all those things on the shelf and then I'd brew tea. And at the beginning of the grow, I would apply a small amount of solid IMO, you know, a week before planting or whatever. I'd probably use like a purslane for a cover crop. I like purslane as a cover crop. But yeah, I'd spray liquid IMO once a week. I'd also have a FAA.
Oh, yeah.
Fish amino acid. That's your nitrogens for foliar. And then it'd have a water-soluble calcium. Now, if you don't like foliar, you know, you don't want a brew tea, then apply your solid IMO. And what you can do is if you have an irrigation system that you flip on, maybe it's on a timer or something, this is good tech. So get your notepad out. What you can do is you can do I would do maintenance solution. So once a week, do maintenance solution. I have a video on it, how to maintenance solution. It's just OHN, FPJ, and vinegar. It seems so homeopathic or so little. Like, how can that affect my plants? This has a really powerful plant effect. Just putting that in the irrigation once a week can be enough for you to experience why natural farming is so cool. One of the reasons natural farming is so cool is it's really nuanced on balanced foods. So you ever eaten a meal and it just hurt you? You felt like you needed to lay down for an hour. I'm just heavy. It's painful.
Oh yeah,
it was so tasty. It's so good. But you know, that probably didn't really add health to you.
Absolutely.
Like, it tasted good, but it hurts. You got to lay down. So a lot of food for our plants is like that. They're eating and then they're like, oh, that was heavy. And they lay down. They got they need to hibernate for 2 days after that feeding. And you don't really get that production out of that because they're processing. It takes so much energy to process that food. Whereas you've also had, you've been playing, you know, your favorite sport, and you've had a good electrolyte drink, like it was just, wasn't too sweet. It was just right, or some good mineral rich water. And man, did that give you energy? Did that boost you? And you're able to continue, whereas you were kind of dragging before just because of all the energy use.
Hmm.
These are the effects that can happen to plants. And so these really light nutrients, what they can do is allow what you've already done in soil preparation and genetic selection to just keep humming along, and you're giving them a glass of Gatorade on the marathon run that they're running. They're running by, they haven't broken stride, they're still going to be first place, and they've grabbed that cup of Gatorade from that aid station attendant that's holding it out for them, and just boom, slam it back, keep running at full speed. I didn't even slow down. And that's what maintenance solution can be, where they're actually gaining energy and not having to process anything because it's a very balanced nutrient. So that little bit of food in FPJ, that balance, believe it or not, minor nutrients they're getting from the vinegar, and then that prebiotic that the OHN is. So, but what you can do is you can send that through your drip system without clogging your drip system, because you're not putting microbes through your drip system. You're not putting a bunch of yeast and fungi that's in liquid IMO. Never send your liquid IMO through your fertigation system.
It's all right, not in the drip system.
But you could do something like maintenance solution. And what you want to use, if you want a cheap solution, just inline this, where you just fill a bucket of your maintenance solution, turn on your normal watering, and it just yanks it right on through. You don't have to create a big, and all this is a little snip of your main line, and you plug in a little device, and this device is called a Mazzy injector.
Oh, Mazzy injector? I've never heard of this.
Right. None of you cannabis people have, because you're all oh, Dosatron is so cool and expensive and nuanced, and, you know, I need to get my proper thing. Figure out how much you want to apply to your whole area that you're watering. Put it in a bucket, and the Mazzy injector has this technology called Venturi technology, which is used in a lot of different ways. But Mazzy, I mean, I think you're going to pay $20 maybe for a Mazzy injector for a home grow, maybe 30.
Oh, right.
And it'll take you maybe, 10, 15 minutes to install, if you know how to do PVC. And what it does, is it uses your water pressure to suck up a small amount of your fertigation bucket during the thing. So it'll spread that whatever bucket you put in there, it'll yank that little by little throughout the entire watering cycle. So you get a very diluted, even application of whatever nutrient you want to put in there. But yeah, Mavi injectors are used in a lot of big ag scenarios, but they're typically not even thought of in cannabis.
Man, listen, this episode ran the gamut. Absolutely incredible. I don't think that we can follow up. We do have more questions, but you guys, we're just going to have Chris Trump back on because we've got to let him go eventually. This has been great, Chris. Thank you so much for taking the time today, man.
My pleasure, Jordan, and such good questions, you guys. Pleasure talking with y'all. And I think next time we'll talk in Denver on the 7th, huh, Jordan?
Fuck yeah, May 7th. Come on down to Tetra Lounge. Chris Trump is going to be there. Team Growcast is going to be there. Brett from Heart and Soil, a bunch of people. But yeah, super excited to have you with that, man.
Yeah.
You guys know where to find him. At Soil Steward, of course. Just Google Chris Trump. You'll find all of his stuff. The website is christrump.com, I believe.
Yeah.
But he's everywhere. Yeah. Thank you again, buddy. Really, really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, man. It was good talking to you. See you guys.
Take care. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
We'll let him off the line. The Mary Beth Sanchez exit, as they call it. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you to the members that tuned in live. Of course, follow us on Instagram at Growcast. Find everything at growcastpodcast.com/action. Has all the links. I appreciate all of you guys listening in so much. Listeners, members, I hope you're doing incredible things in your garden. This is Jordan River signing off for Chris Trump. We'll see you next time on Growcast, everybody. Be safe out there and grow smarter. That's our show, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to Chris Trump. Before we wrap it up, puritycoffee.com, code GROWCAST. Go and step up your coffee game, everybody. People have been loving this promo. I'm going to give away these green coffee beans at the end of the month to two lucky code users. These green coffee beans will allow you to grow your own coffee tree in your own home. We care so much about the cannabis that we smoke. You should really start feeling that way about your coffee as well. Coffee beans can be laden with pesticides and mold and mildew, and you're going to want to get the good stuff. Purity Coffee doesn't just take the organic certification at its word. They test the coffee beans, make sure there are zero pesticide residues, zero mycotoxins, and they test for the highest levels of antioxidants. It's going to make you feel great. Check it out, puritycoffee.com. No more drinking mid. Step it up to the good stuff. Code GROWCAST for 20% off, I believe. 20% off. Go and get it, folks. Puritycoffee.com. Code GROWCAST. And be sure to send me a screenshot of your code to be entered to win prizes. All right, everyone, that's all for now. Again, Denver, Saturday, May 7th. Huge meetup. Come and see us at the Tetra Lounge. And that goes down at 2 p.m. is when it starts. 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. So there you go, everybody. I'll see you there. So excited to see you, Colorado Gromies. And lots of other trips planned. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.